Good day, everyone, and welcome to today's Children's Health Coverage Press Call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, you'll have an opportunity to ask questions during the question-and-answer session. Please note that this call may be recorded. It is now my pleasure to turn today's call over to Joan Alker, Executive Director for Georgetown University Center for Children and Families. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Ashley, and thanks everybody for joining us here today. My name is Joan Alker, and I'm the Executive Director of the Georgetown University Center for Children and Families, and I'm also a research professor here at the McCourt School of Public Policy. I am the lead author of the report, and I want to thank my co-author, Lauren Roygardner, who was with me, for her excellent work. Just a couple of quick logistic notes. This report is embargoed until 12:01 a.m. Eastern Time Wednesday. That's tonight at right after midnight, and we are taping this call. So let's get to it. First, I want to thank all of our speakers in advance. We have a great lineup for you today, and I will introduce them all in a moment when they speak, but I do want to give a special shout out to our partners at the American Academy of Pediatrics for joining us today. There are a number of them here in the room, but more importantly, for their tireless efforts and leadership to improve children's health. Today, we are releasing our ninth annual report that tracks children's health insurance coverage at the state and national level. This report looks at two-year trends from 2016 to 2018, analyzing American Community Survey data from the Census Bureau. We believe this is the first national report to look at this two-year time period, a time during which our nation moved from implementation of the Affordable Care Act to a time when some of our leaders moved to repeal and dismantle it. This report looks at what has happened to kids' coverage during this two-year period. In a few instances, we're not yet able to look at two-year trends and include only a one-year trend, 2017 to 2018, as noted in the report. Most of it, however, is two-year data. Finally, we are unveiling a new interactive state data hub today with a variety of indicators of children's health coverage status and quality of care, so please check that out. So let's get back to the report. So for many years, our country has made progress improving children's health coverage rates. This progress predated the passage of the Affordable Care Act, or the ACA, but the ACA was the cherry on top of the sundae for kids and brought the uninsured rate to the lowest recorded level of 4.7% in 2016. However, the number and rate of uninsured children started moving backwards in 2017, and this trend continued into 2018. With over 400,000 more children uninsured in 2018 as compared to 2016. As a result, much of the gains in children's coverage that came about as a result of the Affordable Care Act have now been reversed. The national uninsured rate for kids in 2018 was 5.2%, which translates to just over 4 million children who were uninsured in the U.S. in 2018. As the Census Bureau itself said last month, and we agree, the main cause for the rise of uninsured children is the loss of public coverage, most notably the loss of Medicaid and CHIP. What is especially troubling about this trend is that things will likely get worse for children before they get better, for two main reasons. First, this loss of coverage came during a time of strong economic growth and low unemployment, when children should be gaining coverage in the employer-sponsored market. But no statistically significant change in the one-year period, 2017 to 2018, is seen in that regard. During this calendar year, almost 1 million kids lost Medicaid. Should an economic downturn occur, and we know that one will eventually occur, we would expect a lot more kids to become uninsured. Second, the policy reasons behind the loss of public coverage for kids, which we'll talk more about in a moment, are continuing in 2019 and perhaps even accelerating, which suggests that these numbers will continue to go in the wrong direction when we get this year's data next fall. These findings should be a clear call for action among our political leaders if they care about children's health. Now let's talk about some of the key findings of the report. It's clear from the report that the loss of children's coverage is widespread, with 15 states seeing an increase in the number and or rate of uninsured children, in most cases both, that's statistically significant. This level of backwards movement at the state level has never happened since we started writing this report 10 years ago. States where the uninsured rate for children has gone up most rapidly are, in order, Tennessee, Georgia, Texas, Utah, West Virginia, Florida, and Ohio. Texas continues to have the highest rate of uninsured children in the nation by far at 11.2%. No other state is even in the double digits. Only one state in the nation made progress during this time period, and that was North Dakota. Another important finding is that states that have not expanded Medicaid to parents and other adults under the ACA saw an increase in the rate of uninsured kids that was three times as large as states that have. Children in these states that haven't expanded are nearly twice as likely to be uninsured as those living in states that have expanded Medicaid. This is not surprising to us, as research has consistently shown that offering coverage to parents and the whole family will decrease kids' uninsured rates as well, which is why Medicaid expansion is a kids' issue, though it is rarely seen as such. Who is losing coverage? In looking at the demographics of those children who are more likely to be uninsured, some interesting trends emerge. The highest uninsured rates are not for the poorest kids, but rather for those living just above the poverty line, between 138 and 250% of the federal poverty line. These are families working in low and moderate wage jobs with incomes between roughly $30,000 and $53,000 a year for a family of three. These children have the highest uninsured rate in the country of 7.3%, and we saw the biggest increase for this group from 6.9% in 2016 to 7.3% in 2018. The median income eligibility level for Medicaid and CHIP across the country is right around this income, 250% of poverty. So many of these children are eligible for Medicaid or CHIP but aren't currently enrolled. Or they may live in a state that should consider a CHIP eligibility expansion. Children and families above this income range also saw a significant jump up. This likely reflects a few things: the growing cost of employer-provided coverage, most especially the lack of affordable dependent coverage, and the rising premiums in the marketplace for those who are not subsidized in 2017 and 2018. Next, white children and Latino children, who can be of any race, saw their uninsured rates go up. Black children actually saw a slight decline in their uninsured rate and are now covered at better rates than the national average for all children. Also notable is that young children under age six saw a significant increase from 3.8% to 4.3%. which is especially troubling as babies and toddlers are in need of higher levels of preventive and routine care. We'll hear more about this later, and we will have a companion piece on this group, age group, coming out. But I just want to note, typically insurance rates are correlated with age. So the younger a child is, the more likely they are to have coverage. But we now see seven states where kids under six have a higher uninsured rate than school-age children, and that's very troubling. Those states are Kentucky, Nebraska, North Dakota, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, and Wyoming. Let's get now to why are more children becoming uninsured. As I mentioned before, Medicaid and CHIP have seen sharp declines in children's enrollment. The serious erosion of child health coverage that we're discussing today is, in our judgment, due in large part to the Trump administration's actions or inactions that have made health coverage harder to access and or have deterred families from enrolling their eligible children in Medicaid or CHIP. Specifically, we believe there are three main reasons. First, in this data, we are seeing clear evidence of a chilling effect among immigrant families, particularly for Latino children whose uninsured rates are already high and are going up, a climate of hostility that has been created by the Trump administration's many actions and rhetoric has led to fear and reluctance among immigrant parents to enroll their children in government programs, including Medicaid and CHIP. In most cases, these children are citizens, but the parent is an immigrant and they're worried about being deported, separated from their children or having trouble in the future adjusting their status, and we'll hear more about that later in the call. Second, we see more red tape for families enrolling or renewing their kids' coverage. These red tape barriers by states are being put up either with the explicit encouragement or not so benign neglect by the Trump administration, which is ultimately responsible for ensuring that states fulfill the mission of Medicaid and CHIP to get kids covered. These include problems like more paperwork being required, more frequent income checks, letters being sent to the wrong addresses, but a child is promptly cut off when renewal paperwork isn't filed. We will also hear more about this later in the call. And finally, our third bucket of reasons is a little bit more intangible, but we've always said there's been a welcome mat for coverage for kids for many years in this country, and more recently with the Affordable Care Act, we had a culture of coverage. That welcome mat has been withdrawn. After many years of clear bipartisan leadership to get kids covered and national attention on the value of coverage, the discussion in 2017 about repealing the Affordable Care Act, cutting Medicaid, and delaying funding for CHIP has had repercussions. It has caused a lot of confusion about whether or not families could get coverage for their kids or not. And just when families needed more help in navigating this complex environment, they got less because funding for consumer assistance was cut. In the case of CHIP outreach grants, because of the congressional delay, those were delayed, and we missed a critical back-to-school period in 2018. In closing, the importance of continuous coverage for children cannot be overstated, and it has long-term consequences. Children who have Medicaid have better health outcomes even as adults. They're more likely to graduate from high school and have higher earnings as adults, and as a result, use fewer government benefits in the long term. While 5.2% may sound like a small number, the world of families affected is much larger because families whose child is uninsured even for a few months face medical debt and even bankruptcy if a child falls on the playground and breaks a wrist or has an asthma flare-up and winds up in the ER. The red flags are waving in this data, and it's up to our elected officials to reverse this troubling trend. So I am now going to turn this over to our other speakers who are seeing these trends play out in their communities. First, we're going to go to the state of Florida, which saw a large jump of 51,000 more children becoming uninsured from 2016 to 2018, an increase of 18%. We have two speakers with us today, Marivi Wright and Tamiko Spears, who are both community outreach coordinators at the Player Center for Child Health at Wolfson Children's Hospital in Jacksonville, Florida. They are community-based enrollment counselors, and the families they see are experiencing fear and confusion about enrolling their children in Medicaid and CHIP. And we're going to start with Marivi to tell us about the chilling effect that you're seeing.
Hello?
Yes, we can hear you now, Marivi. Please go ahead.
Okay. Yes, my name is Marivi Wright. As you said, I work for the Player Center for Child Health at Wolfson Children's Hospital. I'm the Community Partnership Manager, and in my department, we work with families, and we help them apply for Medicaid and CHIP benefits. I mainly work with the families that belong to the Latino and the Hispanic community, and lately what we see is a lot of fear among our families. The unknown and all the new rule, not new rule, the families are a little bit lost, and they are trying to navigate these applications, try to see they qualify and don't qualify, but the fear that they have is what is making them decide not to enroll their kids in any of the benefits. I can give you a few examples. For example, I have a family that very recently they had a baby. The baby was born in the United States. The parents are students. And we started the process of the Medicaid application for the child. During the application, the parents became very scared, and they decided to stop and not do the application anymore. They told me they didn't want to apply for the child, and we stopped doing that. A couple of weeks later, this child got sick and had to be rushed to the emergency room. When the parents left the emergency room, they knew that they needed to have coverage. So they reached out to me, but they still were in fear, and they were asking me, what do we know? What do we do now? We don't want to apply for Medicaid for our child, but he needs to have treatment. He needs to have follow-ups. What do we do? So after explaining to the family that they could apply for Medicaid for the child, that the child qualifies for Medicaid, it took quite a few tries and quite a few conversations with the family because the fear was there. And after doing that back and forth for quite a while, we were able to apply for the child again, and the child has Medicaid now. But this is what we are seeing more and more.
Thank you. We're now going to hear from your colleague, Tamiko Spears.
Hello. My name is Tamiko Spears, and I'm a community outreach coordinator at Wolfson's Children's Hospital. And my sole responsibility is to help uninsured or underinsured children receive coverage, either via Medicaid or kid care. So some of the trends that I'm seeing is like the red tape barriers. So DCF has started requesting documents that I haven't seen them request in the past. And then they're starting to count income differently than they have in the past. For example, I have a family that was being bounced between Medicaid and kid care because Medicaid was counting alimony as income, which then threw them into a subsidized kid care program. But kid care was saying, no, we're not counting alimony, and this family belongs to Medicaid. So between 2 to 3 months, as this family was being bounced back and forth, the child was not covered. So eventually I reached out to kid care, and they decided that we're going to count the alimony and we'll put them in a subsidized program. So that's one example. And just this morning I got another call that a family that has been bounced back and forth since, and she named the time limit when we had the storm. So it was Hurricane Irma. So that was 2 years ago. So this family has been trying to get coverage for a couple years, and they've been kicked on and off of Medicaid, and kid care is doing the same thing, saying, no, y'all are Medicaid eligible, and that's where you all belong. So finally someone had given her our information, and we're going to try and assist. But for 2 years, this child has not had any coverage, while mom has constantly gotten denials from both programs. So those are just some of the examples that we're seeing, and we have many, many more where it's income is not being counted either correctly or incorrectly by either program. Or they're requesting these documents that are unclear, and the family is so confused with what the department is actually in need of, and that's in turn giving them an ineligible status.
Thank you, Tamiko, and thank you both for what you do. And this is exactly, unfortunately, the kind of assistance that families need, and they need increasingly because, as Tamiko mentioned, we've heard this from many states where there is an effort to check income more frequently, that they are receiving pressure from the Trump administration to crack down in the name of cracking down on fraud to check income. And I just want to address that issue directly for a moment. Again, we hear that this is a rationale for this increasing red tape to root out fraud, and of course that's a worthy goal that we all share. However, there is no solid evidence that parents are enrolling their children fraudulently in health coverage, and policymakers who are worried about fraud and want to be good stewards of the taxpayer dollar should follow the money. There is no money going to poor families in the Medicaid program. The money in Medicaid for children in most states is largely flowing to managed care organizations, and that's where they should be directing their anti-fraud efforts, not putting up barriers for these families to access health care for their children. Now we're going to move to Texas. This, as I mentioned, is the state with the highest child uninsured rate, and I'd like to welcome Adriana Kohler, a senior health policy analyst with Texans Care for Children.
Hi, everyone. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Hi. My name is Adriana Kohler. I work at Texans Care for Children. We're a children's advocacy organization that works statewide in the Lone Star State to drive policy change for kids. We are deeply concerned about the high uninsured rate for kids in Texas and across the country. What we're seeing is this is a problem for kids of all backgrounds in communities throughout the Lone Star State, with huge uninsured rates in communities from Amarillo to Brownsville, Odessa to Longview, and Houston to Dallas. So there isn't a community that's kind of immune to this issue. This report is really important. It should be a wake-up call for state and federal leaders. But the good news is that there are some steps that policymakers can take. One of the problems here in Texas that state leaders should tackle is the extra rounds of red tape that knock eligible kids off of Medicaid. As you know, Medicaid plays a critical role for health insurance for children. Unfortunately, here in Texas, once the state determines that a child is eligible for Medicaid insurance, it often requires the family to continue to gather and submit more and more paperwork throughout the year to keep confirming their eligibility. Specifically, after a child is in Medicaid for 6 months, the state sends a notice to thousands of families that it thinks might not be eligible anymore. However, according to data that we've received from the state, the databases flagging those families is wrong at least 30% of the time. Unfortunately, you know, this trips up a lot of families. For families that meet the eligibility criteria for Medicaid, these extra rounds of red tape trip them up. One of the reasons they get tripped up and knocked off of Medicaid is because the state has a very tight 10-day window to send out the notices and process responses from families. The clock starts ticking on this 10-day window when the state generates the notice to send in the mail. Then the mail carrier delivers the notice. Families need to go through their mail, figure out what it means, find the documentation, put together pay stubs and letters from their employer, put it in the mail, have it delivered back. All of that has to happen in less than 10 days. As a result, many kids who are still eligible for Medicaid are knocked off of their insurance and have trouble seeing a doctor and getting their medical care they need. Good news is the issue is now on state leaders' radar, so we're hopeful we can work together to get more eligible kids covered. We're urging state leaders to make this and other coverage issues a priority during legislative session. So those are some examples that we're seeing here in the state of Texas.
Thank you so much, Adriana, for all your work and those really helpful remarks. So now we're going to turn to our final speaker. And as I mentioned in my opening remarks, the American Academy of Pediatrics has been just shown tremendous leadership in protecting the health and well-being of all children. We're joined today by Dr. Lon Rafalusi, who is a national spokesperson for the AAP. She's also a pediatrician here in town at Children's National Hospital, and so she knows firsthand what kind of impact this has on health coverage for children. So Dr. Rafalusi.
Thank you all for joining us today, and thank you for the opportunity to speak with you. As you heard, I am Dr. Lon Rafalusi. I'm a national spokesperson for the American Academy of Pediatrics, and I'm also a practicing pediatrician at Children's National Hospital in Washington, D.C. So I see patients from the tri-state area, and I know firsthand the importance of health insurance coverage for children. It is the foundation that ensures children can receive the care they need when they need it. And that is why I'm deeply concerned by the findings in this report. And as we've heard, the numbers paint an alarming picture, and these are more than just statistics to me. They represent my patients and their own stories. I also think about the millions of children who are uninsured and worry about their critical services they are missing out on and what it means for their lifelong health. So children are not just little adults. They have unique health needs that require unique care. And if a child does not have health insurance coverage, it could mean missing a life-saving vaccine or skipping a well-child checkup. So just to kind of put a face to what we're talking about, just recently I saw a 4-year-old little girl with asthma who had been coughing for several days. And putting my stethoscope on her chest, I could hear that she was wheezing pretty badly. Her parents had been appropriately giving her her asthma medication at home, but she wasn't getting any better. So we talked about what could be provoking this asthma attack. I prescribed a short-term medication to help her get better. A nurse in our office met with them to review how to use an inhaler. We scheduled an appointment for her to come back 3 days later and also made sure that she had a future appointment with a pulmonologist, her asthma specialist. And when she came back, she looked great. She was much better. She was back to chasing her brother around at home, had made a pretty good recovery. And all of this comprehensive care was possible only because she has insurance. On the flip side, I've seen countless other children in the same situation, but due to being uninsured and unable to pay for medical care, the family tried their best for their child at home, but the medication ran out, and eventually the child ended up in the emergency room or even admitted to the hospital. I worry about these kids who don't have insurance and are one illness away from ending up in the hospital due to delays in care. Also, very importantly, as we've mentioned, when children cycle on and off of coverage in unpredictable ways, as you heard from Marivi and Tamiko, for example, it disrupts their overall care and their ability to access the services that they need. As the report outlines, there are many reasons why we're losing ground when it comes to children's coverage, and I've witnessed one of these reasons in my own clinic. Policies like the dangerous public charge rule have created confusion among immigrant families, leading them to avoid or even disenroll from programs that they are eligible for, like Medicaid, out of fear. I've talked with families about the benefits of health, housing, and nutrition programs, and more parents are saying that they don't want to sign up, even though they are eligible. This chilling effect will take a long time to reverse, and I worry about the services these children are missing and the impact it could have on their health in the meantime. Also, other families may not know their children are uninsured until they go to seek care. My pediatrician colleagues have already seen this happen in their own patients, like Elijah in Texas, whose story was shared in the New York Times recently. The 9-month-old was rushed to the emergency room with a respiratory virus, only for his mother to learn that he wasn't covered by Medicaid anymore. It turns out that his mother had missed a really small 10-day window to provide proof of income while trying to re-enroll her older children, which could be why Elijah lost his Medicaid coverage. So I'll end by saying, in 2019, I should not be talking about how more children are now uninsured. We know what works. We have a long track record of success in getting children covered. We need to stop creating a climate of fear and confusion and start making it easier for families to enroll their children in coverage. That's why pediatricians will continue to fight any proposal that makes it harder for children to get covered, and we will advocate for a more seamless, welcoming, easy process for them to get what they need to be healthy. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Dr. Felucci. So I'm going to open up the call for questions. Ashley, could you provide instructions for our callers?
Certainly. At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press the star and 1 on your touchtone phone. You may withdraw your question at any time by pressing the pound key. Once again, to ask a question, that is star and 1. We'll pause a moment to allow any questions to queue.
So while we're waiting for questions, I just want to mention a couple of things for reporters. We have a number of reporters on this call from states around the country. And the national uninsured data that we are reporting on comes out in the fall for the prior calendar year. But one way that you can check to see if your state is likely continuing to go in the wrong direction is to check your Medicaid CHIP enrollment and see what's happening to it for children. This is reported to federal CMS on a monthly basis. We track this very closely here. Tricia Brooks, my colleague, routinely blogs on this, and we know that these losses continue in 2019. So 5 states, when you look at this particular metric, where I would be very worried that the uninsured numbers is going to continue to go in the wrong direction, I'll just note because they have big Medicaid CHIP losses in the last 18 months, are Missouri, Idaho, Louisiana, Utah, and Wyoming. But again, this is a really important data source to look at. It's a little bit confusing because, of course, not all children losing Medicaid and CHIP will become uninsured. Some of them are hopefully moving to private coverage, but not all of them, and that's why we have more uninsured kids. That's the bottom line. So that's a really important metric to look at. Okay, do we see any questions, Ashley?
Not at this time, but once again, star and 1. All right, we do have a question from Tammy Luby with CNN. Please go ahead.
Thank you for holding this call. Joan, can you explain a little bit more about the issue of the older children? You just mentioned it, and the health insurance premiums, because health insurance, you know, if you look at the Kaiser Family Foundation report, they will say that the increase in health insurance premiums has been growing at low levels, you know, a couple of percent a year. So now that the economy is doing better and presumably, you know, we know the median income and wages are on the rise, why is it now that you think that these higher income children, their families are finding employer-sponsored coverage to be too expensive?
So two things. I think you're asking actually about two different things. One is something that I mentioned about the age of uninsured children, and I'm going to respond to that in a minute. And the second is about higher income kids, which I am going to ask also my colleague Edwin Park to jump in on that point. But first, on the age question, when you look at uninsured rates for kids, it's almost a straight line generally trending upwards in terms of babies have the lowest uninsured rate because, you know, they were born in the hospital. They are hopefully getting enrolled in Medicaid and CHIP. They're at the doctor all the time. And that diminishes as you go up the age, and teenagers have the lowest coverage rate. So that's because coverage is so important for that under age 6 group, we just highlighted that we did see a significant increase in that group. Overall, it's still lower than the national average, but we do, those 7 states that I mentioned, the preschool age group actually now has a higher uninsured rate than school age kids, which is pretty startling. But let me move to the second piece of your question about the income range. As I mentioned, employer-sponsored coverage, in particular, dependent coverage, for families who are in the income ranges we're talking about, both those who generally should be in public coverage below 250%, but that is not entirely true. And in fact, quite a few of the states that have big increases in their uninsured rate, like Texas and Florida, for example, and some of the others, like Idaho, their eligibility level is lower than the national average, and that's probably one of those reasons because those.
Wait, sorry. Could you explain that their eligibility level for CHIP and Medicare,
and Medicaid,
lower?
Exactly.
But why are
lower.
They not on their family plans? If their family, let's assume their parents are working.
Right, and so that's exactly the issue. So in theory, those families could maybe be getting coverage through their employers or maybe be getting coverage in the marketplace, but many of them are not. And so we think there are a couple of reasons for that. The first is that it's very rare for employers of low-wage workers, workers who are working in the service industry, tourism industry, seasonal, typically don't offer dependent coverage that's affordable for those families. A lot of times they don't even offer very good coverage for the worker, but actually affordable coverage for the whole family is very hard to find for those low and moderate wage workers. And so that's an issue. Secondly, with respect to the marketplace, and Edwin will jump in on this, obviously we have something called the family glitch, which means the affordability test is determined on the employee's share of premium, not the whole family's. So, Edwin, do you want to jump in a little bit more and talk about the situation for the higher-income families?
Sure. So, you know, the assumption is that some of the kids losing Medicaid and CHIP could get subsidized marketplace coverage, or for the higher-income marketplace coverage that is only modestly subsidized or not subsidized at all. And what we've seen in 2017 and 2018 were very sizable premium increases in the individual market inside and outside the marketplaces. We saw enrollment in the marketplaces fall in both 2017 and 2018 among kids. And then we don't have the kids.
Among kids specifically?
Among kids specifically. And we don't have the numbers for kids outside the marketplace in the individual market, but you know, the Kaiser Family Foundation, among others, has reported, you know, between 2016 and 2018, a 3 million plus drop in total enrollment off exchange. So I think what we're seeing there is that employer-based coverage continues not to be affordable. We know deductibles continue to grow. Premiums, while premium growth hasn't been excessive, it still continues to grow faster than wages. And then the marketplaces have been less affordable. And the key factors in the marketplace, premiums up in those 2 years, 2017 and 2018, were the expiration of reinsurance, the end of the cost-sharing reduction subsidies, the fears over repeal, and then concerns over the likely repeal of the individual mandate, which ultimately happened in 2017. Didn't take effect till this year, but there were clearly enrollment losses in 2018 that were the result of people misunderstanding when the penalty was being repealed. So I think those factors likely made these alternate forms of coverage not particularly accessible to families. So to the extent that higher income families weren't eligible for Medicaid and CHIP or no longer eligible for Medicaid and CHIP, they were not being able to find alternate forms of coverage that were affordable.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Yes, thanks, Tammy. So that was Edwin Park, who is a research professor here at Georgetown Center for Children and Families. For those of you who don't know him, I think we have a couple more questions.
Yes, we do have a question from Ben Conorak with the Miami Herald. Please go ahead.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Right. Yes.
Okay, great, thanks. So thanks for holding this call. We were just actually talking about this, and this is a Florida-specific question, so I apologize to reporters from other states, but you know, here in Florida, we've actually seen enrollment growing significantly here. And you know, I saw in the report that Medicaid and CHIP are the top source for children's insurance. So is it fair to assume that that is really what's driving our jump in the uninsurance rate? And kind of in tandem with that, you know, you're talking about the chilling effect and also disenrollment. Is that quantified at all? How much disenrollment are you seeing? And, you know, how do you quantify that? Do we have a sense of whether it's more disenrollment or non-enrolling in the first place?
So I'm going to ask our Florida folks to jump in, but I'll just say a couple things right off the bat. This is Joan Alker again in response to your question. So I work quite a bit with folks in Florida, and my impression is that of the three causal factors I mentioned, you're experiencing all of those in Florida. You certainly have a chilling effect with your immigrant community. You've got a very complex set of public coverage programs in Florida that can be quite confusing, and you have low eligibility. Florida's income eligibility is 215% of poverty, and actually the state tends to say that it's only 200. That's a separate dispute, but that's quite a bit lower than the national average of 255%. Also, Florida is a state where there were cuts in navigators on the ground, post-ACA, et cetera. So I would say Florida is experiencing all three of the sets of problems we identify, but I want to open it up to my colleagues at Wolfson to respond to that as well. You may be on mute if you're trying to respond.
Hello, can you hear me? This is Marie V. Wright.
Yes, now we can hear you.
Yes.
Please. Go ahead.
Okay. So we serve as a hospital five different counties. We don't have, I cannot give you an exact number of how many kids are not enrolling in Medicaid or anything else like that. But I can tell you that what we see, that is fair to see, that we see more confusion and more fear now than we have seen in the past. So even when we try to help our families to apply for Medicaid and KidCare, it's not as easy. Our conversations are not as easy as they were before. We have to really assure and reassure the families that they are going to be okay, especially for my cases. I work directly with the Hispanic and the Latino community, and that's what I see, the struggles. That's what I see, the kids that qualify for health insurance and not receiving the care that they need. The families are afraid that it's going to impact their future, the immigration status, the you know, even like I was mentioning before, the student, the families that are going to school here and they are students, is this going to be a problem for my visa? Or, you know, the many, many different situations and dynamics that are in the family sometimes with families that have a citizen, the dad is a citizen, the other one is not, and it's creating a situation where they'd rather not to approach us, or if they get a denial the first time, they don't want to try a second time, even if the denial was due to red tape, maybe. They'd rather not to try again because they are scared.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, so I think it's all of the above, and frankly, a lot of the red tape problems arise at renewal, as well as initial enrollment, and the chilling effect, you know, can perhaps be more upon just deciding not to enroll at all, although we have heard of families dropping out as well. So there's really no way to quantify what are the different causes for this, except to say, when we did this report last year and we just looked at a 1 year, 2016 to 2017, we didn't see such a big jump in Latino children becoming uninsured, but now we clearly see that, both in our report and the other report the Census Bureau released. There was a full percentage point increase in uninsured kids who are Latino in that data, so the chilling effect is absolutely here now, unfortunately. And again, no reason to think that's going to abate anytime soon, given our national rhetoric and climate. I think we go to our next question, Ashley.
Can we ask, Mariva, can you please put your phone on mute so that we can get a better sound quality? Thank you.
We'll go next to Scott McIntosh with Idaho Statesman. Please go ahead.
Hi, can you circle back to the Medicaid SHIP participation rate? You had mentioned a few states, Missouri, Idaho, Utah, Wyoming, and the report says that Idaho has a 93.9% participation rate in Medicaid SHIP in Idaho, and so can you explain what the concern is for those rates in those states?
Sure, and this is a good opportunity to mention that many of our state partners around the country are releasing this information, and they can help you, obviously, with great, more in-depth info on their state. I know Idaho Voices for Children is introducing a companion report. So the question you're asking is a good one. The data we actually have on our website about participation rate is a little bit older than some of the data we're talking about here. But the point of that data is to say that, as I mentioned before, the majority of uninsured children are eligible for Medicaid or CHIP, or they're not enrolled, or they may have dropped off. So a state's participation rate, that is what percent of those children who are eligible are actually enrolled, is very highly correlated with your uninsured rate. So, and just as an example, you know, we all know about the Medicare program in this country, right? It's federal, everybody knows, you get to be 65 and you get Medicare, and participation is about 99% for Medicare, and it always is. But that's very different for Medicaid and CHIP for children and even adults. There's really no state that's at 99%, and that's because we have more of a patchwork state-by-state system. And states have to take the initiative and the leadership, along with the federal government, as we've discussing, to make it as easy as possible to adopt policies that assure continuous coverage. And we all know how to do this. This has been moving forward for many years. I will just note on Idaho. Idaho, I think, is going to really continue to have major problems. This report looks at two-year data, 2016 to 2018, but when we did look at the one-year, 2017 to 2018, which is not published, Idaho was by far had a huge increase in your uninsured rate of 1.5 points. So, and we know you continue to have big declines in your Medicaid enrollment. So we should maybe talk offline about that, because there is a lot going on in Idaho.
Sure. Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay. We've got, I think, at least one more question.
We'll go next to Shannon Firth with MedPage Today. Please go ahead.
Hi, yes, this is Shannon. Thanks for doing this call. I wanted to ask just about the outliers here. Why do you see an improvement in uninsured rates in North Dakota? Are they doing something differently there? And also, are African American children doing better as far as their uninsurance rates, or just comparatively not as badly as the white and Latino children in the specific income bracket that saw losses?
Yeah, so two good questions, and I almost escaped getting off the call with nobody asking about North Dakota, because I was going to say up front, I really don't know the answer to that. I will say North Dakota has a pretty high uninsured rate. At least in 2016, they had one of the highest in the country at 8%. It came down to 6%, so they're still above the national average. But it's obviously easier to make progress if you have a lot of uninsured kids, or I should say a high rate. North Dakota is a relatively small state. But I cannot tell you specifically why their uninsured rate has gone down, unfortunately. With respect to your second question, black kids actually saw statistically significant improvement in the period we looked at, which in this case is just a 1 year from 2017 to 2018 of 4.6% to 4.4%, but that was statistically significant. And when you look at the national average and white kids, 5.2%, they are actually doing better. Now, obviously, there are many areas we have racial disparities, but their lowest rate by race is actually Asian children at 4%. But black kids are now doing better than the national average and than white kids on this metric.
Do we know why?
I mean, one obvious reason, I think, is because the chilling effect is having such a pernicious effect on Latino children. And that's not affecting black children as much, but let me ask others at the table if they can think of any other reasons. We're shaking our head. I mean, that's the one that kind of jumps out as an obvious difference there.
Okay, thank you.
And I should just quickly mention, and we've done separate work on this, that the kids that have the absolute highest uninsured rates are American Indian, Alaska Native kids. They have very high uninsured rates, over 13%. And unfortunately, that's been true for a while, and that continues to be true.
And did their rates get worse, or are they just bad? They're always bad.
Yeah, they've had a high rate for a while. I mean, every time we do this report, they unfortunately continue to have a high rate, but it wasn't one that went up in a statistically significant way.
Thank you.
Okay, any final questions, Ashley?
Once again, that is star and one if you'd like to ask a question.
Well, while we are seeing if there are any final questions, I want to share the email address of our communications director, catherine.hope@georgetown.edu. If you would like to get in touch with any of the speakers you heard today on the call, we'd be happy to help you out. And I don't see any more questions. Ashley, do you see any more questions?
There are no further questions at this time.
Okay, well, I want to thank all of our really terrific speakers for joining us. I'm sorry we have to be sharing bad news, but it's been great to work through all of this with all of you, and thanks, everybody, for joining the call today. Have a good rest of your day.